The student was a frequent runner. Jeffrey had looked up the stats. A woman in Caterino's age group could generally do a 12-minute mile. Assuming she ran straight to IHOP and didn't take a detour or stop, the mile-and-a-half run would have taken 18 minutes. That left 42 minutes for something bad to happen. If Caterino had been targeted, then the next step would be determining who would want to hurt her. Was there an old boyfriend who was angry with her for cutting things off? Or was the opposite scenario the case, where an old boyfriend had a new girlfriend who wanted to erase the past? Did Caterino argue with a roommate? Was there an academic rival? Was there an obsessed professor who didn't like being told no? Jeffrey had sent Frank to feel out Chuck Gaines, the walking joke of a campus chief of security. Matt Hogan was interviewing everyone in Caterino's dorm. Brad Stevens was checking on Leslie Truong, the woman who had found Caterino in the woods. Lena was talking to Dr. Sybil Adams. By coincidence, Lena's sister was one of Caterino's professors. Sybil had offered to come in early that morning to go over Caterino's organic chemistry paper. Jeffrey wasn't sure the girl would be capable of delivering anything anytime soon. Sarah had directed the ambulance to take Caterino to the closest trauma center, which was in Macon. The Hartsdale Medical Center was barely equipped to handle scrapes and bruises. When Jeffrey had asked Sarah for a prognosis, she had been almost non-responsive. She was furious with Lena for not finding a pulse, focusing all her anger onto the young cop in a way that should have brought Jeffrey relief. For once, he was not the one on the receiving end of Sarah's sharp tongue. Jeffrey stepped aside so that a car could pass. He walked through the open gates of the university. Main Street stretched out ahead of him. The rain was hitting the ground so hard that it bounced 2 feet off the asphalt. The police station was on his left. Up the hill on his right, the Hartsdale Children's Clinic sat like a monument to bad 1950s architecture. High Penitentiary was the best way to describe the bricked-up style. There was nothing on the outside that would indicate children were welcome. The windows were narrow. The plastic overhang turned any natural light a sallow brown. A glass brick octagon swelled out like a boil on the end. This was a waiting room. During the summer, the temperature inside could soar into the 90s. Dr. Barney, the owner of the clinic, insisted the heat helped patients sweat out whatever was ailing them. Sarah vehemently disagreed, but Dr. Barney had been her own pediatrician before he'd become her boss. She had a difficult time openly challenging him. The man had no idea how lucky he was. Jeffrey climbed the steep slope of the drive. Sarah's silver Z4 Turbo was in the lot on the side of the building. She had parked it at a showroom angle that looked not just directly at the police station, but at the front doors, because castrating Jeffrey with a knife could only happen once, but she could slap him in the face with her $80,000 convertible every single time he left work. Speaking of castration, Tessa Linton was standing beneath the narrow overhang outside the side door to the clinic. She was dressed in cut-off jean shorts and a tight long-sleeve shirt with the Linton and Daughters Plumbing logo across her ample chest. As usual, Tessa's long strawberry blonde hair was spiraled onto the top of her head. Jeffrey tried to smile. When that didn't work, he offered her the benefit of his umbrella. He said, "Long time." Tessa stared blankly into the street. Of all the people in town, Jeffrey had assumed that Tessa would be the most understanding about his transgression. She was not a woman without a past. She was not a woman without a present, either. The streets of Grant County were lined with hearts that Tessa Linton had broken. The two of them had clocked each other as kindred spirits the first time Sarah had brought Jeffrey home to meet her family. Tessa had teasingly warned him about breaking her big sister's heart. Jeffrey had teased back that it's not cheating if it's a different woman every time. They had joked like that for years. Then Sarah had caught Jeffrey in the act. Then Tessa had slashed the tires on his Mustang. Jeffrey asked.
Is Sarah okay? We had a rough morning.
My father is on his way to pick me up.
Jeffrey warily eyed the street. He offered Tessa his umbrella.
You can just leave it by the door.
She crossed her arms over her chest. Jeffrey watched sheets of rain pound the parking lot. Water cascaded from the slim overhang. The minute Tessa stepped out, she would be drenched. Jeffrey should have left her to the elements, but chivalry won out, and he doubted the umbrella would be here when he got back. Tessa asked,
"How's the old coat and place working out for you?"
Jeffrey was going to ask her how she knew he'd bought a house, but then he realized the entire town knew.
"It's got good bones. I'm going to remodel the kitchen. Throw some paint on the walls."
She was smiling now.
"Does the toilet still flush?"
Jeffrey got a sinking feeling. He hadn't been able to hire a professional inspector. No one would return his calls. Eddie Linton had put out a plumber's omerta on him. Tessa said,
"That old clay sewage pipe is full of tree roots. You're going to be shitting in a bucket this time next month."
Jeffrey could barely afford the mortgage. His savings had been wiped out by the down payment.
"Come on, Tess, help me out here."
"You want my help?"
She stepped off the curb. Her father's van was in the street.
"Buy a metal bucket. Plastic absorbs the smell."
Jeffrey struggled to close the umbrella as Eddie pulled into the parking lot. He knew the man kept a .380 Ruger in the glove box. The van swerved wildly in front of the building. Jeffrey dropped the umbrella. He yanked open the door. Inside, he almost slammed into Nellie Morgan.
"Hmm."
The clinic's office manager tutted at him before turning on her heel and walking away. Jeffrey suppressed a sarcastic remark. Nellie was immune to sarcasm. Dr. Barney was not. He told Jeffrey,
"Looking good, son,"
as he pointedly closed an exam room door behind him. Jeffrey studied his reflection in the mirror over the hall sink. The rain had done its work. His shirt was soaked through. The back of his hair stuck up like a duck's butt.
"What are you doing here?"
Molly Stoddard, Sarah's nurse, looked the least happy to see him. Jeffrey smoothed down his hair.
"I need to talk to Sarah."
"Need or want?"
Molly looked at her watch, though she was one of those women who always knew what time it was.
"She's got back-to-back patients. You'll have to..."
"Molly?" Sarah's office door slid open. "Go ahead and start Jimmy Powell's nebulizer. I'll be right in." Molly got in another unhappy glower before shuffling down the hallway. Sarah asked Jeffrey, "How is the girl?"
"In surgery."
"She..." Sarah disappeared into her office. Jeffrey debated whether or not to follow. He smoothed down his hair again. He passed a disapproving mother in the hall. Her toddler was frowning up at him, too. Jeffrey needed a diagram like the kind that were printed at the front of Russian novels to figure out how people related back to Sarah and to what degree they hated him. He found her sitting behind her desk, pen in hand, filling out a prescription. Sarah's office was the same size as Dr. Barney's, but she had made it feel smaller by taping pictures of her patients on the walls. There had to be more than 100. Soon there wouldn't be a bare section of wood paneling. Most of the images were school photos. There were some candids with cats, dogs, and the occasional gerbil. The chaotic decorating style extended around the room. Her inbox was overflowing. Textbooks were laid out on the floor. Charts were piled into the two chairs and on top of filing cabinets that contained even more charts. If Jeffrey didn't know better, he would have assumed she'd been robbed. He scooped up a stack of folders so he could sit down.
"I ran into Tess outside."
"Close the door." She waited for him to stand again, close the door, and sit back down before asking, "Are you finally going to get rid of Lena?" Jeffrey had his own question ready.
How long did it take you to find a pulse?
At least I checked.
Lena checked when she arrived on the scene. I saw it written in her notes.
Was it in the same color ink?
Sarah waved off a response.
Tell me what the hospital said. How was the girl doing?
Jeffrey let her biting tone hang between them. Over the last year, he had become intimately familiar with the two different Sarahs. The one in public was tragically silent, ever respectful. The one in private ripped a knot in his ass every chance she got. Jeffrey dropped the stack of charts onto an already teetering pile.
The girl's name is Rebecca Catarino. She goes by Becky. The hospital can't release her information.
But, he paused to slow her down.
I spoke with her father. The neurosurgeon is going to perform a
craniotomy to release the pressure inside of her skull?
Sarah asked.
What about the material in her throat?
The pulmonologist said it looked like
undigested pastry.
Jeffrey gripped the arms of the chair.
Are you going to finish all of my...
Sarah didn't play along.
Why are you here, Jeffrey?
He had to wade through his irritation to remember.
Did you notice that her legs were paralyzed?
Paralyzed? Sarah was paying attention now. Explain.
The surgeon told Becky's father that her spinal column was ruptured.
The vertebral column or spinal cord?
Jeffrey took his time retrieving his notebook from his pocket, flipping to the right page.
During the evaluation, her feet and legs did not respond to stimuli. An MRI revealed a small puncture on the left side of her spinal cord.
Puncture? Sarah leaned over his desk. Be more specific. Was the skin puncture too?
That's all I've got.
Jeffrey closed his notebook.
The father was understandably upset. The surgeons weren't offering much information. You know how it is at the beginning of these things. They don't know what they don't know.
They know more than they let on, Sarah said. Did you get the location of the puncture?
He went back to his notes.
Below C5.
No ventilator then, small mercy.
Sarah sat back in her chair. He could tell she was running through the possibilities.
Okay, spinal cord injuries. The majority are a result of physical trauma. Sports injuries, car accidents, gunshot and knife wounds. Accidents, too, but not generally trip and falls. You'd need a tremendous amount of force to rupture the spinal cord. Or a vertebra could fracture and puncture it. Or maybe she landed on something sharp. Did you find anything at the scene that could cause a penetrating wound?
By the time I talked to the father, our scene was washed away by the rain.
You didn't think to cover it with a tent?
For what?
Jeffrey asked, because this was the crux of the problem.
Why would I take extra steps for what looked like an accident? Did you see something that made you think otherwise?
She shook her head. You're right.
Jeffrey cupped his hand to his ear, as if he couldn't hear her. She gave a reluctant smile. He hated the way he felt when he got a positive reaction out of her, as if he was in junior high school, trying to impress a cheerleader. He said,
This case feels hinky, right? It's not just me?
She shook her head, but he could tell she shared his trepidation.
I want to see the MRI. The puncture is strange.
It could change everything.
Or it could be explained. I need more information.
I do too.
Jeffrey felt some of the pressure start to lift off his chest. One of the things he missed most about Sarah was being able to talk out what was bothering him.
Kevin Blake is pushing me to make a statement today. He wants to calm fears. Part of me thinks he's right. Another part of me thinks that we're missing something. Then I ask myself, what could that something be? There's no physical evidence that asks the question that an investigation can answer.
I doubt the girl will be able to help, Sarah said. Even if she survives the surgery, even if she's able to communicate, post-traumatic amnesia will probably render her useless as a witness.
I'm going to talk to Leslie Truong. She's the one who found Caterino. Maybe she remembered something.
Maybe. Jeffrey studied Sarah's face. She looked like she had more to say.
What is it?
We're just talking here, right?
Right.
Sarah tapped her pen against the desk like a metronome. You should ask for a pelvic exam.
You think she was raped?
Jeffrey was puzzled by the leap.
We're talking about a good kid here. You saw how she was dressed. She wasn't even wearing makeup. She'd spent the entire night before at the library. She's not the kind of party girl you'd expect to get assaulted.
The pen had stopped tapping. Are you telling me there's such a thing as a rapeable woman?
No, that's crazy.
She was purposefully misunderstanding him.
I'm saying look at the evidence. Caterina wasn't bound. She wasn't showing signs of bruising. Her clothes were still on. Nothing looked disturbed. It was broad daylight in the woods about 200 yards from a packed street.
And she was at the library last night instead of a bar. And she wasn't dressed like she was asking for it.
Stop putting words in my mouth. Nobody asked for that, he said. All right, maybe I was clumsy, but it's true that she's not in a high-risk category. She's a good student. She's not into the drug scene. She's like you, always had her nose in a book. I mean, for Christ's sake, she was out running at the crack of dawn, not hanging out in an alley trying to score benzos.
Sarah pressed her lips together. She took a deep breath. He watched her nostrils flare. You know what, Jeffrey? This isn't my job anymore.
What job?
I'm not the person you talk through cases with. I'm not your hinky whisperer. I'm not going to tell you how to neutralize Kevin Blake. It's no longer my job to be the emotional scaffolding that holds up your life.
What the hell does that mean?
It means I don't have to listen to you, or worry about you, or help you, or even look at you. Sarah jabbed her finger into the desk. Your mother's birthday is tomorrow, did you remember?
Shit,
he hissed. The florist closes at 4, and they don't do same-day delivery, so unless you want her sobbing on the phone, you better call them right now before you forget. Jeffrey looked at his watch. He had 5 hours. He wasn't going to forget.
That's one thing. I never asked you to...
Did you remember Possum and Nell's 17th anniversaries next month? Sarah apparently did. Last time we were there, you promised them you'd drive over for the party and that you'd write a toast. You also promised Jared you'd show him how to throw a spiral and you need a flu shot. The titers on your vaccine should be measured. God knows you should be tested for STDs. You're past due for a physical. You want more blood pressure medication? You need to make an appointment with your GP before your script runs out.
I know all of this,
he lied.
I've already made appointments. I've got the speech on my laptop.
You're so full of shit.
How about you, Sarah? Can we talk about how screwed up you are for a change?
His knees banged the desk as he leaned forward.
How about this new guy you've been running around Atlanta with? Parker? That's not a man's name. That's a mechanical pencil you get from your grandfather.
She laughed. Wow, you really got me there. Jeffrey was going to get her if it was the last thing he did.
You look like shit right now. How about that? Did you even brush your hair today? I can tell you're hungover. You probably haven't slept in a week. You're barely hanging on. I'm trying to talk to you like an adult about... Jeffrey.
Her throat seemed to grip the word. Sarah never yelled when she was mad. Her anger always hissed out in a furious whisper. Get out of my office.
Get your ass off your shoulders.
He slammed his hand on the desk. She had no right to be angry with him right now.
Jesus, Sarah, I was trying to talk to you about a case and you blew it up into this.
I'm not the coroner. I'm not your sounding board. You damn well made sure I'm not your wife. He forced out a laugh.
I'm not the one who filed for a divorce.
No, you're just the one who kept lying to me when I asked why you were staying out late, why you suddenly had to go outside to take phone calls, why you changed your email password, why you turned the notifications off on your phone, why you put a privacy screen on your laptop. He could see her throat straining. You made me think I was going crazy. You humiliated me in front of the entire town, and you still keep lying about.
I made one mistake. One.
One.
The word came out more as a sharp breath. No matter what he said, she refused to believe it was just one stupid mistake.
It's been an entire year, and you still can't tell me the truth.
You know what, sweetheart? Here's the truth. I'm not your husband anymore.
He stood up to leave.
I don't have to listen to this shit either.
Then go.
He wasn't going to let her have the last word.
You did things too, Sarah.
She held open her arms, inviting him to take his best shot.
How about spending a Sunday in bed with your husband instead of rushing off to have lunch with your family? How about telling your mom not to drop by unannounced 6 days a week? How about telling your dad to stop coming in behind me and finishing projects I can finish in my own damn time? How about not telling your sister every detail of our sex life? How about for once, just once in our entire marriage, putting my needs, my feelings, ahead of every member of your goddamn family?
She started riffling the desk drawers, scattering papers and office supplies onto the floor. Jeffrey stared at the mess. This was like the car, where she went crazy and tore up her stuff instead of his.
What are you doing?
Looking for this.
She tossed a calculator onto her desk. I need help counting up all the fucks I don't give about your feelings. His jaw locked down so tight that he could feel his pulse throbbing in his face.
You can shove that calculator up your tight ass.
And you can go fuck yourself.
I got plenty of women who can do that for me.
No shit, cocksucker.
Fuck you.
Sarah's response got lost in the bang of Jeffrey sliding back the pocket door so hard that the door jamb busted open. Wood splintered. Pictures fluttered through the air. In the hall, he ran into a wall of white. Nurses, physician's assistants, Dr. Barney in his lab coat, gathered around the nurse's station. They all looked at him in disgust, because Sarah was so fucking strategic that only his side of the argument had carried out into the hall. This wasn't a divorce. It was Carousel from Logan's Run. Jeffrey's shoes squeaked as he walked up the hallway. His wet socks bunched around his ankles. He felt like steam was coming out of his head. He shouldered open the door. The storm still raged outside. Lightning cracked the sky. The clouds were as black as his mood. He looked for his umbrella. It was in the middle of the parking lot. The rod was bent. Jeffrey walked out into the driving rain. He snatched the umbrella off the ground. His phone started to ring. He ignored it, the muscles in his arm tensing as he tried to force open the canopy.
Shit!
Jeffrey hurled the useless umbrella toward the closed door. Rain pelted the top of his head. He trudged toward the driveway. He glanced at Sarah's car, but he wasn't so far gone that he was going to give her the satisfaction of doing something stupid. He looked back at the umbrella. He looked at the car. His phone rang again. He grabbed it out of his pocket.
Jesus, what?
There was a hesitation, a slight intake of breath. He could tell it was Lena without looking at the caller ID. He demanded,
What, Lena? What do you want?
Chief?
She was still hesitant in a way that made him want to spike his phone into the ground. He could see her across the street. She was standing inside the glass door at the front of the police station.
Chief?
You know I'm here, Lena. You can see me through the damn window. What is it?
the girl.
She stopped herself.
The other girl. The student.
Have you forgotten how to use adjectives?
She's missing,
Lena said.
Leslie Truong, the witness who found Becky Catarino in the woods. She never made it to the nurse's station. She hasn't been to her dorm or class. We can't find her anywhere.
Atlanta, Chapter 6. Will drove in silence while Faith transcribed details from Daryl Nesbitt's newspaper clippings into her notebook. He could hear her ballpoint pen scratching the paper. She liked to circle important words. The noise grated like sandpaper on teeth. He yearned for a distraction, but by detente, they never played the radio in the car. Faith was not going to listen to Bruce Springsteen. Will was not going to listen to NSYNC. Except for the occasional, huh, Faith seemed content with a prolonged silence. Will's brain kept churning up Faith-centric conversation starters. So, how are things with Emma's father? Are stay-at-home moms and working moms really like the Bloods and the Crips? What are the words to Baby Shark? Anything to save him from the rabbit hole of analyzing every single word that Sarah had uttered to him in the last hour. Not that there was a lot of raw data. Over the course of three brief conversations, his funny, articulate girlfriend was suddenly talking in a code that Alan Turing couldn't break. Back at the prison, Sarah hadn't technically hung up on Will when he had called her from the bathroom, but the exchange had ended abruptly enough to send Will running through the halls like a lunatic. He was lucky the COs hadn't shot him in the back. Then Sarah had basically shot him in the face. Salad? McDonald's? What? When Will was a kid and things got crazy, he'd imagined that his brain was a stack of lunch trays. He'd always been a big fan of food served in compartments. Pizza in the big rectangle, corn, tater tots, and applesauce in the squares. Visualizing trays gave him clearly defined sections to store his problems so that he could deal with them later. Or not. The stacking system had gotten him through some harrowing times. If a foster parent was rough with him, or a teacher yelled at him for being stupid, he would put that bad feeling in a compartment, and when all the compartments got full, he would toss another tray on the stack. Will didn't know where to store the three conversations with Sarah. The last two made very little sense. Sarah normally refused to talk about dinner before lunchtime. She was never, ever going to bring Will McDonald's. That left the first call, which had lasted less than 1 minute, to scrutinize. Sarah had sounded confused, then angry, then robotic, then like she was about to start crying. Will rubbed his jaw. He was missing the most obvious clue. Sarah had told him she was standing in the middle of a parking lot. That's why she had ended the call. She was not going to break down in front of an audience. For all of her talk about open lines of communication, she tended to Michigan J. Frog her emotions. In public, her mood was always steady. In private, she could break down in a way that not many people would guess she was capable of. Will could count on one hand the number of times he had seen Sarah absolutely lose it. Sometimes it happened when she was angry, sometimes when she was hurt, but always, always she did it behind closed doors. He looked into the rearview mirror. The road stretched behind him. Sarah was half the state away by now. He slid his phone out of his pocket. He could locate Sarah with an app, but he knew where Sarah was, and the app would not tell him what she was thinking. Will looked down at his phone. The lock screen showed a photo of her with the dogs. Betty was tucked up under Sarah's chin. Bob and Billy, her two giant greyhounds, were both pushing their way into her lap. Sarah's glasses were askew. She'd been trying to do a crossword puzzle. She'd started laughing, and Will had taken the picture. And she had begged him to erase it because she thought she looked goofy. So Will had set it as his wallpaper. And none of that mattered right now because why hadn't she texted him?
Good Lord, Will, how do you sit here? Faith demanded. I mean, physically, how does your body fit into this space?
Will glanced over. She was pushing back on her seat, trying to steal some legroom.
Emma's car seat is in the way.
She asked,
why didn't you move it?
It's your car.
And you're a giant man.
She got on her knees to make room in the back. Will stuck his phone in his pocket. He tried to keep up the conversation.
I thought they were hard to put in. Car seats.
It's not rocket surgery.
She raked back her seat and stretched out her legs in the glorious free space.
Do you know how many Saturdays I spent stopping parents to check their seats when I was in uniform? You wouldn't believe how stupid people are. There was this one couple.
Will struggled to pay attention to the story, which took an unexpected turn into a drug bust and having to call animal control. He waited until Faith took a breath, then nodded toward her notes.
Anything stick out?
The cell phones are bothering me.
She had zeroed in on Daryl Nesbitt's offer to trade information.
The operation has to be sophisticated, more so than the usual. Before the riot, the warden confiscated 400 phones. That's a hell of a lot to keister in. I mean, I've seen an asshole. I've seen a phone. I don't get how it works. Like, physically, look at my phone.
Will looked at the iPhone 10 in her hand. He told her,
one of those could fetch $3,000 inside.
I could probably do two at a time.
Her phone dinged with a message. Then another message. Then another. Will guessed Amanda was behind the dings. She sent each sentence in its own separate text because the Geneva Conventions did not apply to her team. Faith summarized,
Amanda says Nesbitt has serious medical issues with his leg, and that's what's driving the one-week deadline. I assume the fact that she's texting means they're at the funeral home.
Will looked at the clock. Amanda had made good time. He guessed Lena's house was another 10 minutes away. They had already swung by the Macon Police Department, hoping to surprise her. They'd been the ones who were surprised. Lena was home on maternity leave. She was a month from her due date. Faith said,
I should take the lead with Lena.
Will hadn't considered a strategy, but he said,
that makes sense. She's pregnant. You've got two kids.
I'm not bonding with that dingo over motherhood. Faith scowled. I hate pregnant women, especially first-timers. They're so smug, like something magical took place, and suddenly they're growing live. You know how I magically grew, Jeremy? I let a horny 15-year-old moron trick me into thinking I couldn't get pregnant if it was only the tip.
Will studied the GPS display on the dashboard. Faith said,
I should take the lead with Lena, because I've met your lying, duplicitous bitch of an ex-wife. And I've read your case notes from the last two times you investigated Lena.
Only the first time was an investigation. And she was cleared of wrongdoing. At least any wrongdoing I could prove.
Will realized he wasn't exactly defending himself.
The second time was happenstance. Lena just happened to be caught up with some guys who...
Just happened to be caught up?
Faith gave him a pointed look.
You don't step in dog shit unless you're following a dog.
Will was no stranger to a dog park.
All you have to do is look down.
Faith groaned.
You don't see the bad in Lena. You don't see the bad in anybody who's like her.
Will had to concede silently that she could, perhaps, possibly be right. He had always had a soft spot for angry, damaged women. More often than not, the person they hurt the most was themselves. He also had to concede that they hadn't driven to Macon for a therapy session. They were trying to get information from Lena, and Will, of all people, knew how difficult that was going to be. He told Faith,
she's changeable.
Like a demon?
Like a person you trust, until you don't trust them,
Will said.
You're talking to her, and what she's saying makes sense. But then suddenly, without you seeing why or when it happened, she's angry or she's hurt or she's paranoid, and you're dealing with an angry, hurt, paranoid person.
Sounds lovely.
The hard part is sometimes she can be a really good cop.
He caught Faith's snort of disbelief.
She has the instinct. She knows how to talk to people. She doesn't cheat all of the time, just some of the time.
Being a little corrupt is like being a little pregnant, Faith said. What I really want to get my hands on is Lena's notebooks. This was one of her first big cases. Amanda's right. When you're just starting out, you write down every fart in the wind. That's where Lena would have made her mistakes. We can hang her with her own words.
Will knew she was right. Those first few years on the job, your spiral-bound notebook felt like a diary.
Your boss didn't check it over. It wasn't an official sworn report. It wasn't a statement of fact.
It was where you put down stray thoughts and niggling details that you wanted to follow up on.
And then a defense attorney subpoenaed it, and a judge agreed, and the next thing you knew, you were sweating it out on the witness stand trying to explain that DQ was where you'd gone to lunch, not the initials of an alternate suspect who could be the real murderer.
Will said,
Lena's cunning. The second we ask for her notebook, she's gonna know we're trying to jam her up. And she's had plenty of time to think about it. Tons of people saw us at the station. There's no way she didn't get a call that the GBI asked for her location.
Cops are such bitchy little gossips, Faith complained. But we didn't tell anybody which case we're looking into. Lena's probably got a lot of cases she's worried about. Her luck is gonna run out eventually, and I'm gonna be there with the handcuffs.
Will was surprised by her vehemence.
When did you get such a hard-on for her?
She's 32 years old. She's got 15 years of policing under her belt. She doesn't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. Plus,
Faith held up her finger, as if to signify this was the important part.
I'm Sarah's friend. The enemy of my friend is my nemesis.
I don't think that's what Churchill said.
He was only fighting Nazis. We're talking about Lena Adams here.
We'll let the comparison slide. And he did not admit that Faith's diatribe was reinforcing her earlier point. The more she attacked Lena, the more Will wanted to make excuses for her. His fatal flaw was that he could understand why she did the horrible things she did. None of Lena's mistakes were committed out of malice. She honestly thought she was doing the right thing. Which brought to mind one of the most important lessons Amanda had ever taught Will. The most dangerous cop on any investigation was one who always thought he was right. Faith said,
I think you should tell Sarah about Daryl Nesbitt.
Will's head swiveled like a gun turret. Faith shrugged.
You're right. We shouldn't keep this from her. She deserves to know.
Will debated whether or not to confess.
You seem really sure yourself back at the prison. You actually said you agreed with Amanda.
Yeah, well, I talk a lot of shit for somebody who can't stay awake past 9:30.
Her phone dinged again. And again. And again. She opened the text.
Amanda, still no word on Nesbitt's correspondences, so no joy on the friend who sent him the newspaper articles. Sarah just started the preliminary exam on Alexandra McAllister. Amanda wants us to keep her updated on Lena. Gee, Mandy, thanks for the reminder. It never occurred to me to tell you what happens.
Will heard the pecks as she typed out what he assumed was a more measured response. Faith said,
Seriously, you should tell Sarah. We need to stop for gas anyway. I'll wait inside the store to give you privacy.
Will stared at the road ahead. He knew Faith wasn't going to drop the subject.
I already told her.
Faith slowly pressed the corners of her phone to her forehead. Her eyes squeezed closed.
Are you shitting me?
I called her from the bathroom before we left.
Thanks a fucking lot, Will. She's gonna be pissed at me, which...
Faith sighed.
Okay, yeah, I can see what you're thinking. She was gonna be pissed at you, and you're her boyfriend, so you should have told her, which you did, and I'm her friend, so it's on me for not telling her, but good God... This healthy relationship stuff is hard. I don't know how you do it.
Will wasn't sure he was doing anything. I'm apologizing to her right now.
Faith talked while she typed into her phone.
It would help me a lot if you told her that I said to tell her before I knew you had told her.
It's the truth.
We're not okay with Nick roughing up Nesbitt, right?
Will grappled with the abrupt change of topic. He had almost forgotten about Nick's outburst. Will was a big proponent of the menacing threat, but putting your hands on a suspect was crossing the line.
No, we're not okay with it.
It sucks because we have to back up Nick so he'll back us up if we ever need it. Not that we'd ever do something like that, but for fuck's sake, it's just another sucky thing in an already sucky day.
She dropped her phone into the cup holder.
I need more than newspaper articles on these dead women. Were they on dating apps? What's their social media presence? Did they work in offices or at home? I need case files, coroner's reports, photographs, witness statements, scene of crime drawings, toxicology reports. All I've got is that eight women were found in the woods, and Amanda's right about the woods. Look out the window. How could someone die in Georgia and not be in the woods?
Will had been looking out the window for almost an hour. He wasn't as convinced as Faith. Someone was seeing a pattern with these bodies. That someone had devoted the last 8 years of his or her life to tracking them. You didn't do that unless you were obsessed. Will felt in his gut that finding the root of that obsession would answer a lot of their questions. He said,
If we reach out to all the different jurisdictions, someone is going to talk. You said it yourself. Cops are bitchy little gossips. Do we want to get now that we're looking at a possible serial?
Faith was saved answering by her phone dinging, then dinging again. She groaned as she read the text.
Amanda wants you to use your relationship with Sarah to make a connection with Lena.
Will felt his eyebrows furrow. Sarah blamed Lena for Jeffrey's murder. The only way she connected to Lena was with a baseball bat.
He's a pedophile, right?
Faith was back to Daryl Nesbitt.
I mean, part of me says, yeah, Nick, go ahead and beat the shit out of him. Then another part of me says he still has rights. We took an oath to the Constitution, not to whatever feels right. And Nesbitt's still a human being. And he was probably abused as a kid, so there's that.
Will let her last sentence roll around a compartment in his brain.
Not that there's a causality between child abuse and turning into a pedophile,
Faith said, probably remembering who she was talking to.
I mean, for one, the world would be full of pedophiles if childhood abuse was the root cause. And for two, any pedophile who's talking to a researcher is probably going to be in prison, and the majority of the prison population had shitty childhoods. It's kind of prerequisite to incarceration, unless you're a psychopath.
She reversed herself again.
But you can't discount stupidity. I've arrested a lot of idiots from good homes.
Will stared longingly at the radio. Her phone went into rapid-fire dinging.
Amanda says the coroner's preliminary exam of Alexandra McAllister points to accidental death. Sarah hasn't found anything so far that disproves that. She's still looking, but that seems perfunctory.
Faith looked up from her phone.
When has Sarah ever done anything that was perfunctory?
Will could think of a few times, but he wasn't going to share.
If McAllister wasn't murdered, then maybe the newspaper articles are random, and this is a wild goose chase.
We still have Nesbitt's allegations against Lena, which we both know are probably true because she's a dirty cop, and she does dirty cop things to frame people.
Will stared at the open road. He could feel the swirl of another Lena vortex, which put Faith's dogshit metaphor on more solid ground. Another ding from Faith's phone.
And Amanda and I are riding the same wavelength. She says, gloves off with Lena.
Another ding.
All caps. I want her notebooks. Yeah, duh.
Another ding.
Try to get something useful to leverage Nesbitt.
Another ding.
Ask Will if he has a game plan.
Faith groaned again.
Okay, Boomer, that's enough from you. She turned the phone to silent before slotting it back into the cup holder.
Is this killing you inside or what?
The GPS announced the exit. Will slowed the car as he pulled into the far lane. Faith let a few seconds pass before asking,
Are you not answering my question?
Will's jaw felt tight. So did his stomach.
And every other organ in his body.
If there had been a way to talk to Faith, then give her amnesia, he would have gladly spilled his guts.
You're gonna have to narrow it down.
His request didn't buy as much time as he'd hoped. Faith went right to the sore spot.
The Jeffrey part. I was just thinking how I would feel if the woman I loved was suddenly having to deal with the ghost of her previous husband. And it would be killing me. Like, for real dead killing me.
He shrugged his shoulder. The GPS told him to take the next turn. He coasted toward the ramp. He could see a fork at the top.
Faith said, I figured there's a reason you're not asking Sarah to marry you, right?
Will waited for the GPS to tell him what to do next.
First rule of cop club. Don't ask a question if you won't like the answer.
Faith turned off the sound on the GPS. She knew left and right weren't easy for Will. She pointed down the road.
That way.
Will went that way.
For what it's worth, Sarah really loves you, Faith said. She calls you my love, and it doesn't even sound corny. She lights up when she sees you. Even this morning. She's standing in the middle of an actual violent crime scene, and she sees you, and she smiles like Rose the first time she sees Jack on the Titanic.
Will frowned.
Okay, Jack dies, but you get what I mean. Go this way.
She pointed at the next turn.
How about Duke and what's her name from the notebook? Crap, never mind, they both die at the end.
She pointed toward the next turn.
Ghost? No, Patrick Swayze was murdered. The fault in our stars, bright stars, love story? Well, you have to admit she should have died for her bad acting. Oh, Princess Bride. Wesley was only mostly dead. Turn up here.
As you wish.
Faith pointed to a mailbox in the distance.
My side of the road, 349.
Will parked on the street in front of the neighbor's house. Lena and her husband lived in a one-story, tan and white cottage that looked like every other cottage in the neighborhood. One spindly tree in the yard. One mailbox with flowers around the base. The driveway was steep. Jared Long, Lena's husband, had parked his motorcycle across the sidewalk. He was in the process of rolling up the garden hose. He had clearly just finished washing the bike, which was one of the most beautiful machines Will had ever seen. Faith drew out a fuh.
That's a cheap vintage.
Will had no idea she was into motorcycles.
6-speed, power plus 105 CI, air-cooled V-twin, closed-loop sequential.
Shut up.
Will saw where he'd gone wrong. Faith wasn't ogling the bike. She was ogling Jared, who was wearing nothing but a pair of board shorts and the body of a 25-year-old who spent 3 hours a day at the gym. Will was secure enough in his masculinity to admit the kid was incredibly handsome. The insecurity came from the knowledge that Jared was a carbon copy of his incredibly handsome biological father, who happened to be named Jeffrey Tolliver. Sarah's husband had died without ever learning that Jared was his son, which was a Jack and Rose-type tragedy if you looked at it from a Wesley, mostly dead perspective.
Fucking Lena.
Faith flapped down the visor to look in the mirror.
How did that bitch get J-Lo's life with Lizzie Borden's personality?
Will got out of the car. He checked his phone again as he walked toward Jared. Still no text message from Sarah. No smiley face. No heart. He powered off the phone. Will had a job to do. He couldn't stop every 5 minutes to check his phone like a lovesick schoolboy.
Hey, man. Long time.
Jared greeted Will with a wide grin.
What are you doing here?
Looking for Lena.
Will straightened his shoulders. At least he was taller.
Is she around?
She's in the house. Good to see you.
Jared gave him a firm handshake, and then he patted Will on the shoulder, because apparently all the men from small southern towns patted each other like dogs.
How's Aunt Sarah doing these days?
She's,
Will's mouth did something crazy.
We're getting married.
Wow, that's great, dude. Tell her I'm...
He winced. Faith had slingshotted back into the mini. She had forgotten to take off her seatbelt.
When's the date?
Soon.
Will broke out into a sweat. He prayed Faith had not heard him.
We're not telling people, okay?
Sure.
Jared grinned at Faith as she slowly made her way over.
How's it going? I'm Jared, Lena's husband.
Mitchell, Faith. Just call me Faith.
To her credit, she didn't swoon.
Nice to meet you, Jared.
You too.
Jared crossed his arms. The muscles bulged in the wrong way. The kid was obviously skipping pushdowns for his triceps.
Y'all are a long way from Atlanta. Do you have a case down here or what?
Will glanced at Faith. Some of her cop brain broke through. She asked,
Lena didn't get a call from the station.
I turned off her phone.
He nodded up at the house. Lena's blue Toyota RAV4 was parked nose out in front of the garage.
Poor thing's been asleep for the last 2 hours. She's like growing an entire new human being inside her belly. It's awesome.
Awesome,
Faith echoed. The last of the handsome man spell drained away.
We need to talk to her. Do you mind waking her up?
Faith started up the steep driveway without waiting for an answer. Jared gave Will a questioning look. Will tried to smile. He felt his lips stretching like the plastic around a six-pack of Coke. He grabbed the empty bucket by the bike. He knotted up the drive to get Jared going. Jared threw the hose over his shoulder as he followed Faith. He asked Will,
This about one of Lena's cases?
Will realized that Jared hadn't said anything about turning off his own phone. He was a motorcycle patrolman stationed out of Lena's squad. When Lena hadn't answered her phone, the next call would have been to Jared.
We need Lena's perspective,
Will said.
I'm sure she'll want to help.
Don't get her riled up, okay? She's delicate right now, with the baby and everything. The home stretch has been really hard on her.
Will heard Faith let out a long, disgusted sigh. He told Jared,
I promise I won't say anything to upset her.
Thanks, dude.
The lie of omission earned Will another manly pat on the shoulder. He saw Faith touch the rear quarter panel of Lena's RAV4 as she passed by. Then he watched Jared do the same. Neither one of them probably realized what they had done. The muscle memory came from working patrol. They were trained to leave their DNA and fingerprints on the rear of any vehicle they stopped, in case either was later needed to establish a chain of custody. Lena worked at a police station. There were dozens of prints on the back panel.
Lots of stairs, Faith announced, making her way up to the front porch.
Lena assumed from her delighted tone that she was thinking about Lena dragging a baby stroller up the steep incline. Faith had many thoughts on strollers. Will let Jared sprint ahead of him. He remembered these steps from a year ago. Will had been working undercover. He hadn't known whose house he was entering. Then he'd heard a gunshot blast. Then he'd found Lena with blood on her hands. Jared held open the front door. He took the bucket from Will and dropped it beside the hose, just inside the doorway.
I'll tell Lee you're here. If I don't see you before I leave, have a good one. I need to hit the shower before work.
Thanks, Faith said.
Will looked down at the hose, which had dragged grass clippings into the house. It was already coming uncoiled, because Jared had not wrapped each end three times and screwed the connections together, which was the way a man was supposed to store a hose.
Psst.
Faith's eyebrows were near her hairline. Will gathered she was judging every inch of Lena's house. The public space was open floor plan. the living room at the front, the dining room and kitchen at the back, the entrance to the hall between them. Everything looked very tidy except the kitchen, which was frozen in the exact same stage of remodeling as it had been when Will was here before. The cabinets were still unpainted. Boxes of laminate flooring were still waiting to be installed. At least an actual sink had replaced the bucket under the faucet. Will allowed himself a petty sense of satisfaction. He'd gathered that Jeffrey Tolliver had been the kind of man who didn't quickly finish construction projects. By contrast, Will would not sleep until the last nail hole was puttied and the third coat of paint applied.
Psst!
Faith was at it again. She nodded toward a photograph that looked like Lena was kissing another woman on the mouth. Will said,
Sybil, her twin sister. She died a few years ago.
Faith looked mildly disappointed.
Will?
Lena was making her way up the hallway. Her hands were pressed against the walls for balance. She was normally a very petite woman, but the pregnancy had rounded out her face and taken some of the luster from her dark brown hair. Jared was right about the difficult home stretch. Lena's normally light brown skin was the color of a tube sock. Her eyes were bloodshot. She looked exhausted. Nothing glowed about her but misery. The swell in her belly reminded Will of a softball crammed inside of a straw.
Wow, Faith said. You're so huge. You must be due any day now.
For some reason, Lena looked aghast.
It's next month.
Oh.
Faith gave the word some space.
You're carrying so low. Is it twins?
No, just one.
Lena gave Will a panicked look that he didn't quite understand. She was smoothing her hands over her belly the way you'd calm a frightened dog. She asked Faith,
Who are you?
I'm Faith Mitchell, Will's partner.
Faith vigorously shook Lena's hand.
Sorry I jumped straight in. I've got two of my own. I loved being pregnant.
Okay, so she was fucking with Lena.
You said one more month?
Faith's voice was filled with false exuberance.
That's such a fractious time. Right before your whole life changes forever. My first one went 2 weeks past his due date. I thought I was going to explode. They say you forget the pain, but my God, it was like sitting on a table saw. I hope Jared likes cuddling.
Faith laughed. Lena laughed. Only one of them meant it. Will suggested,
Should we sit down?
Lena looked relieved as she padded toward the couch. Faith waited until the last second to ask,
Could I have a glass of water?
Lena struggled between sitting and standing.
I'll get it.
Will hoped his expression conveyed to Faith that she needed to knock this off. It did not. She kept babbling as Will walked into the kitchen. He easily found a glass in the cabinet because the doors were stacked on top of the fridge. He turned on the faucet. The floor had clearly been swept, but grit bit into the soles of his shoes. Grout. The subfloor showed gouges where tiles had been ripped up. It made sense to make the floor uniform, especially with a baby coming. Will had not realized how important it was to have a long, straight surface until he'd rolled a tennis ball back and forth with Emma, a game that the two-year-old could play for 5 hours straight.
And Beyonce, Faith was saying. It took her 6 whole months to drop the baby weight. You think someone with all of her resources would lose it faster?
Will scowled a warning at Faith as he walked toward the couch. He handed Lena the glass of water. She looked like she needed it more. He told her,
We had some questions about one of your Grant County cases.
Grant County?
Lena seemed surprised by the detail.
I thought this was about the drug bust last month.
Will could see Faith making a mental note to look into the case. He smoothed down his tie as he sat across from Lena.
No, this was 8 years ago. A guy named
Daryl Nesbitt.
Will wasn't surprised that Lena had worked that out. The case was not the kind that you easily forget. Lena asked,
What's the lying pedophile saying now?
Faith made a show of searching for her notebook in her purse. Lena spoke to Will.
Is Nesbitt trying to leverage you into reopening his case?
Will asked,
Why would he do that?
Because that is what he does. He works angles. He manipulates people. The guy is a spoon.
Lena struggled to put the glass on the coffee table. Her stomach was in the way. Will did it for her.
Thanks.
She sat back with a long exhale of breath. Her hands rested on her stomach.
Nesbitt had two appeals. They both failed. Then he sued Jeffrey's estate. We're talking less than 3 months after Jeffrey died. I work with the DA behind the scenes to buy Nesbitt off. Sarah was a wreck back then. We all were.
Buy him off.
Faith had her notebook and pen ready. She was finally in the game.
What happened?
Lena said,
Nesbitt was living on borrowed time. His disability skewed his poesduit. Then he clocked an attempted murder off a CO and hit all fours.
She was talking about the rating system that the Georgia Diagnostic and Classification State Prison used to assign inmates to facilities. A score of mostly ones put you in minimum security. Mostly fours meant closed or maximum security. The first part of the poesduit ranked physical condition, upper and lower body strength, hearing, and vision. The latter part got into the nitty-gritty. Sentencing, psychiatric history, disability, workability, impairment, transportability. Nesbitt had started with a deficit because of his amputation, but there was some leeway in the system. The attempted murder would have drawn him the high card.
Lena said, I'm not surprised he's figured out how to get the GBI involved. Nesbitt knows how to work the system. The civil suit was his way of getting a county jail vacation. The state paid us to warehouse his sorry ass during the trial. They didn't want to foot the bill for transport every time there was a hearing or a motion.
Faith asked,
So, how did you buy off Nesbitt?
Frank Wallace. He was interim chief after Jeffrey. Went straight to the DA. We didn't want Nesbitt in our jail. In addition to being a spoon, he was rubbing a raw nerve. The asswipe wouldn't shut up about me, about Jeffrey. It was like he wanted someone to take him out.
Will waited for her to get to the part where she had done something about it.
Lena said, The DA was able to get the governor's office involved. When a dead cop's widow is being harassed, people return your phone calls. The day the trial was slated to start, we got Nesbitt to drop the suit in return for reclassifying him to medium security. The governor signed off. GDOC signed off. The judge dismissed the suit.
Will rubbed his jaw. He was inclined to believe Lena was a liar, but she was offering concrete, provable details. Sarah hadn't mentioned any of this during their first phone call. Then again, that was a lot of information to convey in less than a minute. Lena seemed to pick up on Will's thoughts.
Sarah didn't know what was happening behind the scenes. Like I said, she was a wreck back then. There's no doubt Nesbitt would have lost the suit. He had no evidence, no witnesses. I'm surprised he was able to find a lawyer, but he was getting money from somewhere. If it had been up to me, I would have fought Nesbitt to the fucking grave. But Sarah could barely keep her head up. Frank and I had to talk about it. Jeffrey would have wanted us to take care of Sarah. So we took care of Sarah.
Will felt a tickling at the back of his neck. He knew how Lena worked. She was being reasonable, almost compassionate. But history told him the sentiments would not last. Faith said,
Sometimes inmates file civil suits to get information on their criminal cases. It gives them a chance to depose witnesses on the record. They can subpoena case files and internal reports. And they can get your notebooks.
Yeah, Lena said. They can.
There was a subtle shift in her tone. Will could practically see Lena's antenna go up. Faith had obviously picked up on it, too. She adjusted her approach.
Why did Nesbitt ask for medium security instead of minimum?
There's no way he would have gotten minimum. Not with attempted murder of a CO on his jacket.
Lena shrugged. Like I said, the guy knows the system. And he plays the long game. He's too smart to be where he is. We're lucky we caught him on the child porn.
Faith said, about that.
If you're going to ask me about the computer, I stand by my initial report and my depositions and my sworn testimony at trial. I was looking for weapons in the desk drawers. I accidentally bumped the laptop. I saw several photos of nude children on the screen. You can read the appeals court transcripts. The judges were unanimous. They said there was no doubt that I was telling the truth.
Sitting across from her, Will couldn't tell whether or not she was lying, but he felt like Lena was 100% certain that she was being honest, which was one of the many quandaries of being Lena Adams. She was always her own victim.
We're not here to question how you found the porn, Faith lied. We want to look at the original investigation. Do you have your files or maybe your notebooks from the case?
No.
No?
Faith echoed. Because cops did not get rid of their notebooks. Will's were stored in his attic. Faith kept hers at her mother's house, alongside the notebooks her mother had kept, dating back to the 1970s, when she'd first joined the Atlanta Police Department. There was no telling when a case would come back and bite you in the ass.
Lena said, I shredded all of my notebooks before I moved to Macon.
Shredded?
Faith and Will said the same word with the exact same amount of shock.
Yeah, I wanted to put it all behind me.
She winked at Will.
Fresh start.
He knew why Lena had wanted to make a fresh start. There were only so many bridges you could burn before your feet got singed. The Grant County Force had been toxic when Will had investigated it. Lena was lucky that Macon hadn't smelled the taint. But shredding her notebooks was not a fresh start. It was destroying possibly incriminating evidence. Faith asked,
when exactly did you shred them?
Exactly?
Lena shook her head. Don't remember.
Faith asked, was it before or after the civil suit?
Could have been before, or maybe not.
Lena kept shaking her head. But her sly smile said she was enjoying the game.
You know how it is, Faith. Pregnancy brain, I'm in a fog right now.
Faith nodded, but not in agreement. Lena had figured her out. There was no need to pretend anymore.
Faith said, Nesbitt would have subpoenaed your notebooks as part of the civil suit.
I'm sure he did, Lena said. All of my official reports were in the mainframe at the station.
But your notebooks would have the underlying documentation.
Right.
Your notebooks are also where you would have recorded anything that seemed odd, but didn't have enough foundation to make it into your report.
Correct.
But your notebooks are gone.
Shredded.
She was no longer trying to hide her smile. The real Lena seemed happy to finally be out.
Is there anything else I can do for the GBI today?
Faith's eyes narrowed. She wasn't going to give up that easily.
Rebecca Catarino, do you remember her?
Vaguely. Lena stifled a yawn. Sorry, y'all. I'm really tired.
This won't take much longer.
Faith searched through her notebook for a detail.
You were looking at Nesbitt for the attacks on Becky Catarino and...
Leslie Truong.
Lena said, providing the name of the second Grant County victim.
She was a nice kid. I remember that about both of them. They were both on the honor roll.
Both well-liked, but not really popular. My sister taught both of them, which wasn't unusual.
Sybil was the low man on the department totem pole back then. Organic chemistry was a required class. I think Leslie had a steady boyfriend. Becky had broken up with a girlfriend a year or so before, but according to her friends, she hadn't dated or hooked up with anybody.
Will followed Lena's sightline. She was staring at the photograph of her sister. Sybil's eyes were closed as she kissed her girlfriend. She looked very happy. The twins had shared the same Latinx features. They had been identical, down to the matching moles on the sides of their noses. Lena must have felt like she had lost a part of herself when her sister died. Lena said,
"It's ludicrous, because the thing I remember most about that time was being mad at Sybil. I was really worried that people would find out that she was gay. And now I think, who the fuck cares? I mean, honestly. All I want for this baby growing inside my belly is for her to be healthy and happy."
Faith gave her a moment before asking, "You said you were worried about Sybil. Was she involved with Becky?"
"Oh, hell no. Sybil was 100% committed to Nan,"
Lena admitted.
"The gay thing was my hang-up. You know how it is when you're a cop and a woman. I was still fresh, a year younger than Jared is now. Frank and Matt, they were the two senior detectives. They were old school, very conservative unless they were cheating on their wives or bailing on their kids or drinking on the job. I was worried if they found out about Sybil, they wouldn't accept me. I was so young. I really needed people to accept me. Now I'm like, you should be worried that I don't accept you."
Will didn't point out that she was closing the circle. Now they were off the topic of her notebooks. The changeable Lena had changed back again. She said,
"One thing I remember is that Jeffrey talked to Truong's mother a lot. He was good with people, compassionate, patient. He got a lot of incidental information off of her that didn't make it into the formal reports."
Will waited for Faith to say something pithy about the information being in Lena's shredded notebooks, but Faith had the good sense to let her keep talking.
"Jeffrey was great at getting people to confide in him."
Lena shook her head, as if to rid herself of sadness.
"Anyway, a week or so before Katerina was attacked, Leslie had called her mother in a tizzy. She thought her roommates were stealing from her. Which is possible, but stealing is what happens when you live with roommates. So who knows if it meant anything?"
Faith asked, "Was there something specific Leslie thought was stolen? Or were a lot of things missing?"
"I'm not sure."
"What about Rebecca Katerina? Was she missing anything?"
"Maybe. Maybe not."
Lena shrugged off the question.
"Sorry. 8 years is a long time."
"Right."
Faith drilled Will with a look that said, "Which is why you kept your notebooks." Lena had caught the look.
"Considering what we had on our hands, a sticky-fingered roommate was not a priority."
Faith asked, "Do you remember when the Katerina case turned into an investigation?"
"Not specifically,"
she admitted. Another turn of events that would have been in her notebook.
"Jeffrey kept saying from the beginning that it didn't feel right. He was the best cop I ever worked with. When he said something wasn't right, you listened."
"Did you feel the same way about Katerina?"
"No. To be honest, I was too stupid about a lot of things back then. I don't want to put it on Frank, but he was always saying crap like, 'Racial profiling happens for a reason.' I mean, he said that to my face. My face."
Lena pointed to her brown face.
"Another classic he used to throw around was, 'I've never investigated a rape case where the woman was actually raped.'"
Faith looked appalled.
"Right?"
Lena said.
"Like, dude, statistically, how is that possible? You work in a college town with almost 2,000 female students enrolled every year, and you're saying in your 3 decades on the job, no woman ever got raped?"
Faith nudged Lena back on track.
"So, what tipped you over into believing Jeffrey was right about Katerina?"
"Leslie Truong," she said. "That was one of the most horrific cases I've ever seen. And I'm in charge of the sex crimes division in a city that's 6 times the size and full of some heinously bad men."
Faith asked. I thought you were assigned to the drug squad.
I asked for a transfer.
Lena rubbed her belly.
I felt like I should give more to assault victims.
Yeah, Faith said. Pregnancy really puts you in touch with your feminine side.
Maybe.
Lena clearly recognized the sarcasm, but she shrugged it off.
I was raped 7 years ago, and now I'm going to have a daughter. I can't make the world easier for my baby girl, but I can try to make it safer.
Will saw Faith's throat work. This was one of Lena's gifts. She had delivered a blow without even raising her fist. Lena said,
Anyway, you didn't drive all this way to get my philosophy on life. You want to know if I think Nesbitt is responsible for what happened to Rebecca Catarino and Leslie Truong? Absolutely. Can I prove it? No way. Why do I think he did it? Because it stopped when Nesbitt went to prison. That's really all I can tell you about it.
Faith had gone quiet, so Will took over, asking,
What if there are more cases? More victims?
Lena looked askance.
Not in Grant County. Nesbitt had a signature. We never saw it again. And before you ask, Jeffrey made me personally go back through the previous 5 years of cases, not just in Grant, but in the surrounding counties, to make sure there wasn't another victim that we'd missed.
Will had to begrudgingly admit that was good policing. He told Lena,
Nesbitt pointed us in the direction of 8 more cases that have happened since he's been incarcerated. He thinks they're connected.
Really?
She laughed.
Okay. And you're going to believe a pedophile who tried to murder a corrections officer because...
Faith said, Nesbitt was only convicted on the child porn. The Catarino and Truong cases still technically remain unsolved.
This isn't about a case. This is about Nesbitt going after Jeffrey's reputation again.
Lena studied Will. Her eyebrow was arched. He picked up on her sudden paranoia a half second before she asked the question.
Did Sarah put you up to this?
Will cleared his throat. He wasn't going to feed her any information about Sarah.
It's unrelated.
The hell it is!
Lena.
I see it now. I was a little slow before, but...
Lena's laugh was sharp. And like that, she had turned again.
Christ, talk about playing the long game. Sarah thinks she's found a weak spot, right? You're both here to jam me up over Nesbitt. That's why you want my notebooks. You think I was stupid enough to write down something that would land my ass in trouble?
Faith took back over. We're here because we're investigating a string of...
Mitchell?
Lena said, as if they'd just now been introduced.
How long have you two been partnered?
Faith didn't answer.
You'd kill for him, right?
Lena nodded to herself like she already knew the answer.
Sarah thinks she understands what it's like, but she's not a cop. Bad guys, the bosses, the thugs and criminals and civilians and even the victims. Everything they do, every breath they take, is about winding you up. And then someone hurts you, or worse, hurts your partner, and you can't unwind yourself. You shoot off in whatever direction vengeance points you in.
Faye said, The trick is to not let anybody get hurt in the first place.
You know it's not that easy, Lena said. I'm trying to give you some advice, because I watched Jeffrey jump every time Sarah snapped her fingers, and it ended up getting him killed.
Will rubbed his jaw. He could see red clouds edging into the corners of his vision. Faye said, I'm not sure your memory's right on that one. Lena ignored her, telling Will,
Come on, dude. Grow some balls. Sarah's using Nesbitt to yank your chain.
All right. Faith stuck her notebook into her purse. Time to go. Lena smirked.
I gotta hand it to Sarah. She comes off like a tight-ass goody-two-shoes, but that nasty bitch has got a snatch like a Venus flytrap.
Will's fists clenched.
Watch your fucking mouth.
Watch your back, Lena said. You're just as cum blind as Jeffrey was.
Will stood up so fast that his chair scraped back. Okay. Faith was standing too. If anyone gets to punch the pregnant woman in the face, it's gonna be me.
Both of you need to leave.
Jared appeared behind Lena. He must have been listening from the hallway. He was wearing his uniform. His hand rested on the butt of his gun.
Now.
Will threw back his jacket. He had a gun, too.
Jesus, okay, we're leaving.
Faith kept her hand wrapped around Will's arm as she pushed him toward the door.
Let's go.
Will let her move him, but only because he knew the alternative would end in bloodshed. Jared goaded.
Tell Aunt Sarah I say congratulations.
Will's hands itched to pummel the sneer off Jared's face. Faith had to push him again to get him out the door, then down the stairs. Will glared back at Jared. He could beat the kid into the ground with one hand.
Mitchell?
Lena stood in the doorway behind her husband.
I'll let you know if I remember anything important.
Too bad I don't have my notebooks to jog my memory. Oh, my God,
Faith groaned.
Shut up.
Will felt her hand pressing into his back.